Good evening. Welcome to the Salier Report. Today is April 26th if you're in North America, but it's April 27th in Australia. One of my favorite lines is, the world can't end today. It's already tomorrow in Australia, and a perfect case in point. Today is our last segment of the first quarter 2018 wrap-up. For the first 2 weeks, we did news, trends, and stories. Very delicious conversation with Dr. Joseph Farrell. And then last week, the third week, we looked at the financial markets for the first quarter and talked a little bit about resiliency and how you cope and we all get prepared for what I'm describing as the potential for the rape of Russia to happen in North America. And then this final week, we look at our theme for the first quarter wrap-up, which is who's who and what's up in the space-based economy. It's very important for this discussion that you follow along at the web presentation. So head over to space.solari.com. The username and password is in the commentary for all of the different segments of this first quarter wrap-up. But just to help you out, it's if you go to space.solari.com, the username is space, initial cap S, and then first quarter, so 1Q, and then initial cap W, wrap up, initial cap U as well. So 1Q wrap up with the W and the U, initial cap. I wanted to talk about space because I think it is a very important part of the economy on Earth, and it's growing. We did a big annual wrap-up in 2015, published in January 2016, called Space, Here We Go. And to a certain extent, this is an update. It also dovetails on the space-based economy presentation I did in 2015. I used some of the charts which I've updated for this presentation. I have a quote at the top of the presentation really divides into two sections. One is what's up in the space-based economy, and the other is who's who in space enterprise, which I'll go through at the end. So let's start with what's up in the space-based economy. There's a quote from a European investor who I was speaking with in 2016. I could never figure out how the mining and elevator companies were making so much money, and then I subscribed to the Salier Report. I listened to your discussions on the secret space program and the underground bases. Now I know how the mining and elevator companies are making some of their profits. The world makes sense again. I'm a big believer in trying to create an integrated picture of things, and part of what I'm trying to do with our discussions in space is create an integrated picture of what is really going on in space and what it means to the entire economics on Earth, because a lot of the space economics are really about Earth economics. At the beginning, I start off with a definition. The space industry, and I'm using Wikipedia, refers to economic industries related to manufacturing components that go into Earth's orbit or beyond. Owing to the prominence of the satellite-related activities, some sources use the term satellite industry interchangeably with the term space industry. In fact, 90-plus percent of the commercially viable economics are in the low Earth orbit. It's really a satellite business, and we show a little of the statistics. Right now, the United States has 803 satellites, but we're launching at high speed, and Asia's launching at high speed. So the number of satellites operationally are almost about 1,800 now, but rising very, very quickly. A lot of what is occurring in space is a result of the cost of building and launching satellites and maintaining satellites is dropping very dramatically. The second definition I give in the beginning of the piece is on the space-based economy. I'm using the term space-based economy in this wrap-up, although technically space-based economy simply describes economic activities that occur in space, not that occur on the ground on Earth as it might relate to space. So that means asteroid mining or space manufacturing or space trade or construction in space. Anyway, so I'm using the broader definition in this wrap-up on, I'm really looking at the economics of space, whether the activities occur in space or on Earth, whether they're funded by government, the military, or private investors and corporations, and whether or not they relate to the opportunities and risks presented by activities in space or anything going on around us in space. Essentially, my approach to most economic things is I'm an investment portfolio strategist, and I'm always in a search for a breakdown of, you know, I call it how the money works. But with respect to space, what is the GNP of all gross national product of all space-related activities? In a sense, we could call it space gross space product, or GSP. My goal for the first quarter 2018 wrap-up was to begin to try and conceptually integrate both the covert and the overt aspects of what is happening in space around us for the purposes of estimating a gross space product. What's the total economic expression of what is happening in and around us in space? Integrating the covert and the overt aspects is a real challenging thing to do, and I usually do it much faster on a topic. And I've been basically spending two decades before really trying to do it, and I think it just shows you how hard it is to get your mind around what is actually happening in space. We're going to talk about the unanswered questions shortly. What I'm looking for is a framework for how the money works in and around space. I am a person who needs a framework before I can dive too deeply into a topic. Think of a framework as basically a conceptual structure, and I need a framework for anything related to economics, just like a body needs a skeleton. It's a way for me to organize a body of knowledge, and without that framework, I can really have difficulty getting my mind around a subject. If you're going to create a framework for an area of the economy, it's essential to have an accurate pricing function. So some of the examples I used in our write-up of the space-based economy at the web presentation is the tire industry is X percent of the autos part industry. The GNP of China is dollars Y and is surpassing the GNP of the U.S., which is, you know, 99% of Y. If the GNP of the human race is 100%, what percent comes from space-related activities? So relative values are essential to understand the role and the economic importance of any activity or any player on an integrated basis. 10 items look very different when one item represents the vast majority of the economic value than when the relative value of the 10 items are evenly split. So relative value is essential, and that means you've got to have a good pricing mechanism. Two of the reasons that creating an economic framework, or two things that can make it very difficult, are number one is secrecy, and that includes our old friend mind control, and the other is lack of integrity in the pricing mechanism. And we face both of those trying to come up with a framework for space economics. The national security state has engineered massive and unbelievable security on what is going on in space. And in addition, as the economy is centralized, we have the pricing function more and more rigged and backed up by central banks that can print money and invisible force systems that can make it all go. I would say there's no greater secrecy on Earth today than the secrecy surrounding the U.S. and the related NATO and Five Eyes national security states. And this secrecy is making it impossible to figure out what we're doing in space. And it's one of the reasons it's taken me so long to get to the point where I'm comfortable trying to think through a framework for the space economy. Anyway, so what that means is to think about this, you have to deal with an enormous number of unanswered questions. I just want to run through the list. The first question is our economy open or closed? Do aliens exist, whether on our planet or on other planets or in other dimensions? And that includes time travel. Are there human civilizations on spaceships or other planets? So, you know, is Earth a closed economy, or are we trading with somebody else, whether they're human or not? Do we control access to our planetary airspace? There's lots of indications in the UFO phenomena that we don't. And if other civilizations exist or human civilizations exist off-planet, do we trade with them? Do we permit them to buy securities, make investments, or other assets? And that includes human slaves. I've talked before about trying to understand who owns all the debt on the planet, not being able to identify who owns it. Are we required to generate a dividend, pay tribute, or honor secret treaty obligations to one or more off-planet or breakaway civilizations? It's a legitimate question. Dr. Farrell had some great presentations at the secret space conferences on the possibility is that some of the more bizarre behavior and governance decisions on Earth relate to treaty obligations. So, in short, is our planetary economy open or closed? If it's open, what are the rules or engagement? If we price out the reliable UFO sightings, we're talking about trillions of dollars in advanced technology or hardware. And one subscriber write in and say, oh, it's not real. It's all expensive hologram technology. But still, that's a major accomplishment, a major technology, and major expense. So no matter who built, financed, or owned those ships, they're part of our space economics. And of course, these questions raise more questions. What are the underground bases and transportation systems on Earth? What's happening on the moon? Who controls or owns it? Who lives on it? And this returns us to the age-old question, how does the governance system on planet Earth really, really work? Okay, so that's unanswered questions number one, is our economy open or closed? Unanswered question is flow versus control. We know that satellite lanes are the sea lanes of the 21st century. We have more communication, trade, and transaction going through the satellite lanes. It grows every day. It's part of putting up all these satellites. However, how much of what adds economic value is really surveillance and control? Control of the weather, control of disasters, control of people, control of their minds, control of information from Earth observation or data flowing through digital systems, and through those mechanisms, control of trade. How much is really control of what happens on Earth as opposed to facilitating what happens on Earth? Elena Friedland describes what is being built in space as the space fence. You can link to the book review from our web presentation. If she's right, it's converting Earth into a very highly controlled environment, and it's a very sobering vision that means much greater centralization of political and economic power. Okay, so that's the second unanswered question. How much is space economy about control versus flow? The third is military versus civilian. What's the real breakdown of expenditures? Most of the space economy to date has been funded and built by taxpayers and taxpayer-supported credit through government and military funding. The primary commercial business of space has been the satellite industry. Some of the growth we're now seeing results from significant decreases, as I said, in the cost of building and launching satellites. Question, is the current greatest economic growth in space coming from a new vision of Fortress America, in which America extends the life of the U.S. dollar as reserve currency by projecting power globally through cyberspace and space weapons and satellites managing robotic fleets, robotic drones, and robotic armies? Meantime, Russia, China, and the BRICS race to compete so they can't be controlled accordingly. How powerful is the space weaponry behind the U.S. dollar? How powerful is it expected to be in the future? With space or related weaponry involved in various tsunamis, earthquakes, and hurricanes? Was it involved in 9/11 or various unnatural fires in the United States and Southern Europe in the last few years? Big questions here. Military versus civilian. Okay, the next unanswered question. Reinvestment of the financial coup proceeds. I've talked a great deal about the $21 trillion missing from the U.S. government since fiscal 1998 and over $20 trillion plus on financial crisis bailouts. How much of that money was reinvested in space and related technology and weaponry, as well as related underground bases and transportation systems on Earth? How much money have we as a society invested in creating the space economy? Geophysical risks in space weather is the next unanswered question. What are our risks really? There's wide discussion of this and some pretty crazy theories. Is our planet dying? And if so, over what time period? What kind of protection do we require from asteroids that could hit Earth, space dust, solar flares, and changes on our planet or nearby planets? Finally, or next, the real state of our technology. We anticipate rapid changes in material science and a wide range of technologies that will make space a space-based economy very viable. However, a great deal of technology is hidden behind the national security state. If we have ships flying around the planet with anti-gravity propulsion, why are we spending so much money on reusable rocketry? Why is the primary source of our energy still fossil fuels? Why are dramatic drops in launch costs using rockets so important to current growth? It's another puzzling series of questions. Next unanswered question, governance. Global law versus outside the law. The value of any asset is deeply impacted by the law, regulation, and enforcement that defines and governs its creation, existence, ownership, and management. We believe that the legal issues involving space were so important in understanding the economics. We published a special report in 2015 on the legal aspects of space, which we have republished here in this web presentation. It's called Solari Special Report: Issues and Framework of United States Law Concerning Outer Space. What we know is that numerous sovereign governments and likely related corporate parties are acting outside existing treaties and laws. Will space have a cooperative government system, or will it be ruled by weaponry? With increased efforts to privatize space, such as envisioned by the Space Act of 2015, and more recent acts in the European Union, specifically Luxembourg, will space become the ultimate corporate offshore haven? Will satellite users access blockchain and digital currencies to create the ultimate tax evasion scheme? National security law also raises numerous issues involving secrecy, not the least of which is the ability to waive SEC compliance for corporations. How do we know what companies are really making if the national security establishment can simply waive all the laws related to companies' reportings? And finally, two related topics, CERN and Antarctica. What do CERN and other particle accelerators have to do with what is happening in space? What are the facilities and activities in Antarctica, and how do they relate to what is happening in space? Every annual wrap-up, Joseph and I bring up Antarctica, what is really happening? Anyway, what you can see from these unanswered questions is that the variability in answers can drive tremendous variability in the size of the total space product and economy and sort of the nature of it. So the uncertainty leads to tremendous potential variation in understanding the economics of what's going on in space. So I would encourage you to think about the unanswered questions. They're the reason I've held off for so long in trying to come up with an integrated sort of mathematical picture of how to look at space economics. I remember in 1997 and 98, when the U.S. Navy first tried to persuade me that aliens exist and live among us. If you don't know that story, I would listen to the panel presentation from the 2015 Secret Space Program conference. It's pretty funny. I tell the story in detail. And it's towards the end of the tape. I think it's after an hour and 40 minutes. So skip to the back if you just want that story. It's a very good panel. Very lot of interesting material. But it was interesting when they tried to persuade me that aliens exist and live among us, even offering for me to set me up for lunch with aliens. I tried reading all the different books on the topic. I read about 20 to 25 books at high speed and couldn't make any sense out of it because my tool in understanding reality and understanding whether a particular presentation is credible or not is to apply the mathematics of time and money. And the problem with the alien questioner, UFO phenomena, or a lot of things that go on in space is they don't lend itself to earthly mathematics, whether it's time or money. And so if you're dealing with something that's potentially non-human, money as a tool is not very helpful. And it was not, there's so much misinformation and disinformation, purposefully so, in the whole topic of space and the covert side of space and what the military is dealing with in space and why so much money is disappearing into space. It gets you into a whole world of questions that it's really a mind-bending exercise to sort through the information, find out what's credible, and start to build a credible picture of what we do know. And that's why finding Richard Dolan in particular was so helpful for me, because at some point I could just spend years reading Richard's book and integrating my knowledge with his knowledge. And as he picked up more and more on the fundamental legal and financial aspects of the phenomena he was dealing with, there's just more of an integration of knowledge. And that has really helped me in starting to define the unanswered questions and say, okay, you know, I'm ready to take the next leap and see if I can come up with an economic framework. Now, everything that's going on in space is not necessarily covert or secret. There's a lot going on for which there's some pretty good public information. The best source on the space economy, on all the sort of aspects that are public and known, is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, which is headquartered in Paris. OECD has a space forum, which is dedicated to providing statistical information on space activities and economics. Most of its most of the countries that have space programs are, or that have significant ones, are its members. We're now up to 80 countries now with space programs. But all the big ones are in the OECD, or most of the big ones are in the OECD. They have a space forum on their website. You can link from the web presentation. They did a handbook in 2012 on measuring the space economy and then wrote a absolutely significant piece in 2014. It's the third edition of the Space Economy at a Glance, which I would recommend is the best single overview of the publicly disclosed space economy. And then in 2016, they followed it up with Space and Innovation, both a presentation or a study, and also there's a great PowerPoint on their website that gives you a quicker overview. Anyway, if you want to review the publicly available statistics on the space economy, I highly recommend their space forum and their publications, particularly the Space Economy at a Glance. So if you're ready to deep dive on the space economy on the overt side, I would definitely, all of these are linked from the web presentation, and I would definitely take a look and skim the space economy at a glance. Okay, well, after the 60s, the government investment in space, at least the overt government in space, has dropped, and we've really seen a tremendous silence and not a lot of attention in the media about what was going on in space. Until after 9/11, and suddenly space started to rise on everyone's radar screen. The first reason, because a whole series of billionaires, particularly tech billionaires, started to invest in space and start space companies. If you look at the numbers related to what's happening in space, it's not surprising that it would be tech entrepreneurs, because in fact, we've gone from a world where in 1995, less than 1% of the global population was on the internet, and now we have 3.6 billion people as of 2017 on the internet, and the demand for communication and data related to the internet and ancillary businesses, whether it's telecommunications or media or anybody who needs to swap data at high speed, is exploding. And we'll talk about that in a second. I got into this in our 2015 annual wrap-up space. Here we go. One of the things I said in that is I believe that the reason we proceeded with the rebalancing of the global economy in the 90s after we passed the Uruguay Round of GATT was that we made a decision to become a multiplanetary civilization and needed the capacity of India and China and Asia to do that. And that was what inspired the rebalancing. If I'm wrong, what's interesting is if you're going to rebalance the global economy, then global enforcement needs to follow wherever the money goes. I put in a little quote from our 2010 annual wrap-up. If you look at the competition for resources globally, the shift of investment eastward means that the military must enforce. Nobody puts money where they can't enforce. That means as the money moves globally, so must the military. It's simply the nature of the investment model. There's no doubt about it. The ability to put up global satellites and global GIS systems was very much a part of allowing that money to flow. But as I said, I concluded in 2015 that the reason we globalized was we needed the capacity in Asia, both engineering and savings and manufacturing, to finance and operate a major push to become a multiplanetary civilization. Anyway, whatever the answer, as that began, the last decade has seen a concerted effort to interest the global population in space through movies, fashion, and media. I put up some examples. And I think part of that is trying to get the young people very interested in space. Although it's interesting, although the official government sources will not tell you anything about what's happening in covert, in space covertly, Hollywood is always there telling you everything that's going on, telling you too much. So it makes it difficult to figure out what's just science fiction and what's really true. But it's one of the reasons that I'm a great believer in tracking what the movies say about any important subject where there's a lot of covert economic activity. And one of the sections that we have in the under space-based economy is a redo of the movies that we think are worth knowing about that cover space and space-related questions. So check out our section on space and the movies for the first quarter 2018 wrap-up. So one of the developments is as more and more interest, as space has started to move up the radar, and there's a lot more effort with media and entertainment to interest people in space. Now we're seeing Wall Street, which has been very silent about space for a long, long time, start to speak up. Even when satellites took off and were so critical to the financial business, to high-speed trading and high-speed data flows and communication, Wall Street and the investment community have been very, very quiet about space. Part of the reason is if space activities were financed by the government, the military, including the black budget, it paid to be quiet about them if you wanted to access or handle the big money involved. I suspect the other reason is if you're engineering the financial coup to fund space, you want to keep your mouth shut about it because you're trying to get the financial coup to go, and the less people know, the better. Now that the financial coup is over and you've got all the money in the bank, now you can talk about space all day long because you've got your financing lined up and you clearly have an amazing lead. So I think the financial coup players are quiet during the coup. Now that the coup is over and they've got the money, they can go public. Not to say that they're not going to be extremely careful. Anyway, because of that, I think the average citizen has very little understanding of the extraordinary amount of money they and their pension funds and retirement savings have contributed to this effort. It's one of the reasons that we continually focus our cartoons on the invisibility of this extraordinary and invisible flow of money into space and the fact that it's impacting every household budget. It's amazing to me how much money every household throughout the G7 has spent on space, and no one has any idea. I have a great, one of my favorite cartoons we ever did was in a two business guys standing on on the pavement on the street, and they've got their little attaché cases, and one is saying to the other, "Black ops, black schmops. Why should I sweat what a bunch of UFO chasing weirdos are doing 100 feet below the desert in Nevada?" And meantime, there's a hand reaching through the wall and pulling his wallet out of the back pocket, and there's a noise that says cha-ching. The idea is, if you knew how much money was coming out of your back pocket, you'd start getting very interested very quickly. For the last several years, as we when we did the 2015 annual wrap-up, we put together a portfolio of U.S. and European companies involved in space that are publicly traded. And several times in the last few years, I've back-tested those portfolios against the S&P and global stock market indices, and each time they very significantly outperformed. Now, what you'll see is many of those companies are involved in the defense industry, and I think that performance is more about the performance of defense rather than space. If you look at pure space plays, there's only about 4 or 5 satellite companies that represent, you know, pure space plays. Everything else is very much intertwined with defense and aerospace. Anyway, I put up an example of the chart of Lockheed Martin from 1996 to present compared to the NASDAQ and the S&P. And Lockheed is the largest U.S. defense contractor and weapons manufacturer and is very involved with space and satellites, including for the military. And what you can see is they have significantly outperformed the NASDAQ and the S&P 500. Anyway, it's still early, too early to tell how space will perform as an investment sector. My expectation, both here in Asia and in Europe, we're going to see more and more companies evolving and growing that are very much identifiable as primarily space or pure space enterprises. And so we'll be able to see a lot more about the, how space as an investment performs. I put up a quote from one of Berkshire Hathaway's shareholders' letters from Warren Buffett about the fact that flight has never been very profitable for investors. It's important to remember that flight has captured our imaginations, but it has not rewarded our savings historically. Let me just read it. "The worst sort of business is one that grows rapidly, requires significant capital to engender the growth, and then earns little or no money. Think airlines. Here, a durable competitive advantage has proven elusive ever since the days of the Wright brothers. Indeed, if a farsighted capitalist had been present at Kitty Hawk, he would have done his successors a huge favor by shooting Orville down." That's one of the reasons why the space-based economy may have been built with an infrastructure of secret government money, because it was hard to generate the invest, or it was hard to justify. You certainly couldn't justify the investment to private investors, but you would have had problems persuading the taxpayers as well. So much easier to just take and steal the money is what it looks like to me. Anyway, in 2017, last year, after we published the Space Here We Go in January 2016, Wall Street has emerged from its silence regarding space, and I think that's a very important signal. Three firms, and also a signal that the financial coup is not only over, but it's been successful. Three firms published significant reports or comments about the growing space economy. Let me just describe them to you. Goldman Sachs published a comment in spring of 2017, the next investment frontier. and it underscored the dramatic drop in launch costs and the shift to private capital into space enterprises, and made a case for the economics of asteroid mining, a real focus there. One of the interesting quotes from a podcast done by the Goldman analyst after the publication of the report is very interesting. He said, quote, "So much of your everyday life runs through space without you even thinking about it. Automatic toll booths, your credit card authorization when you use an ATM machine, or obviously if you use a satellite radio, TV, and GPS. So much that you do every day runs through space." Very, very good comment. The big study in 2017 was produced by an interdisciplinary team of 12 analysts, calling themselves the Morgan Stanley Space Team in November 2017. The title was Space Investment Implications of the Final Frontier. If you search the internet enough, you can probably dig out a copy. I've linked to the part of the Morgan website that summarizes it, but I've also found some of their affiliates making it accessible on their website, I doubt without permission. But if you dig, I think you can find it. The Morgan Stanley Space Team predicts that the demand for satellites and related communication services is growing. Again, the same thing, dramatic costs and the drops in the cost of building and launching satellites. And I would tell you the if you look at the speed at which everyone, including the Asians, are throwing up satellites, it clearly means a traffic jam in space. We don't get into it in this report, but one of the industries that's going to be most profitable are companies that are really successful at cheaply solving the space debris problem will no doubt be among the winners. It's going to get very crowded up there now. It's going to get a lot more crowded. The Morgan Stanley team predicted that the global space economy will go from $350 billion currently to anywhere from $500 billion, or it's really $620 billion, to $1.75 trillion in 2040. What is interesting about their prediction is that the killer app making all of this highly economic will shift from broadcasting TV to the Internet of Things. And get this, the greatest data demand in the Internet of Things will come from driverless cars. When you look at the numbers, driverless cars are a huge driver of the push to get the satellites up in space. In essence, space is first and foremost about internet bandwidth. Reading the Morgan Stanley study reminded me very much of a conversation I once had with a reporter who had been censored as part of telling the Operation Tailwind story about a story that seriously embarrassed the Pentagon. And they explained to me that the reason the story had been censored by the network was the Pentagon threatened the network satellite feed and the speeds of their satellite feed. And the reality is, without good working satellite communication, the network would have been out of business. Basically, they're broadcasting for TV. And so the story was censored. And it's a reminder of the danger of getting so dependent on space. You're talking about high centralization and the ability to implement very significant control at a central point. I bring that up because one of the most chilling things I've read recently is a special report in The Economist on driverless cars. And even The Economist talked about the risk of consolidating our auto transportation into central control. Let me just read you a quote from the special report. It was called "A Different World: Self-Driving Cars Will Profoundly Change the Way People Live, Foreseen and Unforeseen Consequences." Here's the quote. "If people no longer drive cars, one consequence may be new forms of segregation. Access to some places may be restricted to certain riders or robo-taxi networks, just as some online services are walled gardens or cannot be accessed on all devices. The expert who was interviewed thinks there may be a need for a physical equivalent of network neutrality rules to ensure that all locations are equally accessible to all AVs. In authoritarian societies, AVs could be a powerful tool of social control. The third report published in 2017 came out right before the Morgan Stanley report in October 2017 from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. The Merrill team also estimated the current size of the space economy at around $350 billion, same as Morgan. They were much more bullish regarding the size of the space industry and predicted that it would grow to $2.7 trillion, almost $3 trillion, by 2045. That's more than double the size estimate by Morgan Stanley, saying, they said, quote, "We are entering an exciting era in space where we expect more advances in the next few decades than throughout human history." That's a pretty compelling statement to come out of the mouth of a Wall Street analyst. One other report worth looking at, and I posted a link to their website, is the Space Investment Quarterly Fourth Quarter 2017 report from Space Angels, which is a venture firm that focuses entirely on space-related enterprises. It's promotional, but it gives you a sense of the extraordinary deal flow flowing into startups. Quote, "The entrepreneurial space age has crossed yet another inflection point and shows no signs of slowing down. 2017 was a record year for the space industry on multiple fronts, including amount of investment, number of venture capital investors, and number of new privately funded companies. In fact, 2017 saw a record of $3.9 billion of non-government equity investment flow into commercial space companies. At a sector level, 2017 was the year of commercial launch. The launchers and lander sectors closed the year with the most investment, accounting for over 72% of capital deployed. Launchers and landers also overtook satellites as the most funded segment, with nearly $6.6 billion in equity capital invested since 2009. It's all about getting those satellites up there. If you look at our presentation of the private space companies under Space Enterprise, you can see that there's really, I would call it explosive growth in the number of entrepreneurial and young startups that are being created to invest in the space economy. Look at the list. It's pretty interesting. This also dovetails with multiple indications from the Trump administration and signals to encourage private investment in space. Trump is clearly promoting commercialization. We covered a series of different stories in story number 18 in the news trends and stories for this first quarter wrap-up, and I would encourage you to go over. We link from the space-based economy over to that presentation. But one of the things I did is pulled out a quote from the president's speech in San Diego. The video is in the top news videos in the news trends and stories section. But let me just read this to you. Quote, and again, this is the president in San Diego in March. Quote, "In space, the United States is going to do Colonel John Glenn proud. We are finally going to lead again. You see what's happening? You see the rockets going up left and right? You haven't seen that for a long time. Very soon we're going to Mars. You won't have been going to Mars if my opponent won. You wouldn't even be thinking about it. A new national strategy for space recognizes that space is a warfighting domain just like the land, air, and sea. We may even have a Space Force, develop another one. Space Force, we have the Air Force, we will have the Space Force. We have the Army, the Navy. You know, I was saying it the other day because we're doing a tremendous amount of work in space. I said, maybe we need a new force, we'll call it the Space Force. And I was not really serious. And then I said, what a great idea. Maybe we will have to do it. That could happen. That could be the big breaking story. Look at all those people back there. Ah, the fake news. They know, they understand. Think of that, Space Force. Because we're spending a lot and we have a lot of private money coming in. Tremendous. You saw what happened the other day. Tremendous success. From the very beginning, many of our astronauts have been soldiers or sailors, airmen, Coast Guardsmen, and Marines. And our service members will be vital to ensuring America continues to lead the way into the stars. We're going to lead the way in space. We're way, way behind, but we're catching up fast, so fast that no one believes it." Well, We have a section called Space Enterprise, Who's Who in Space Enterprise. And I have to give all attribution to first Brad Edens, who's helped manage that list and kept it pruned and kept adding and kept it alive for the last 2 years. And then we've had an excellent, excellent effort by Jason Worth, who has updated our lists of U.S. and European traded companies, which are publicly traded, that are involved in the space economy. He's brought those up to date. He's organized them into tables, which I love. You can sort them by the listed data field. So you can, you can sort them by alphabetics. You can sort them by market cap. You can sort them by PE. There are lots of different sort of things that a financial analyst would be interested in. We also have continued our lists of Asian traded companies and private companies, and Jason has the private companies in table form as well. Anyway, it continues to be a work in progress, and because this industry is growing and evolving fast, I would expect these tables to continue to evolve and grow. So, just access Space Enterprise and dive in and start playing. I've never seen anybody go through this material without being stunned at how many companies there are, how much money is involved, and how much is going on in space. And remember, that doesn't include whatever is being hidden by waivers from the national security establishment of SEC rules. That's part of the spooky thing about this. You never quite know what the covert side is up to, but you just know it's big. Anyway, so dive through that Space Enterprise section because it's quite an accomplishment on Jason's part, and I think invaluable to getting your mind around sort of who's who in space and what they're all up to. Okay, so that's it for the space-based economy. I really want you to take away from our discussion and materials in the in this first quarter wrap up, in addition to a great, you know, great recommendations for movies that can entertain you throughout the year. There's some really, if you like movies, it's a fabulous list, and I dare say there's some on it that even the most diehard fans will have missed. But the other thing I want you to take away, and in addition to a great list of movies, is I really want you to understand that space is important, and it's important to you, and you need to understand what it means to you and how you relate to space and what is happening in space. I remember when I first became a guest on Coast to Coast AM radio, which does a lot focused on space and the UFO phenomena. I kept trying to interest the audience in reinvesting in communities and getting interested in roads and bridges and tunnels and things like Chuck Marone and his colleagues do at Strongtown. And it took me many years of listening to their intense interest in space to connect the dots between my personal finances and what was happening in space. So the communities I love were being destroyed by drug gangs, who were being managed by Tony Soprano, who was protected by James Bond, who was making sure that the flow of investment into space and space weaponry continued from the Tony Soprano operation. Despite the fact that I finally figured it out, it was a very painful lesson. And one of the things it taught me that what was going on around me in space was critical to both the global economy and my personal health and economics, not to mention the money flying out my pocket on an involuntary basis. One of the questions I get asked the most is, what is the future of the U.S. dollar, both its value and its role as the global reserve currency? And the reality is the answer is highly dependent, if not completely dependent, on America's commercial and military success in space. If for only that reason, if you're concerned, if you're in a U.S. dollar traded area, this should be of incredible concern to you. And, if we could have a perfect window on what's happening in space, we could predict with great accuracy what's going to happen to the U.S. dollar. I'm also asked about the future of freedom, and that answer is also highly dependent on whether we use supremacy in space to facilitate and support free markets and open access and democratic process on Earth, or use it to implement control, surveillance, capitalism, and Elena Freeland's space fence. And of course, the biggest question is, who's really in control? Is it us or is it somebody else? And does that explain why things are getting so weird on this planet? Anyway, if we want to understand our world and build a human future, we must make space a part of our worldview. So I'm inviting you to join me in understanding what's happening in the space economy, to identify what the opportunities and risks may be for you, to help me create a framework that will help us integrate the overt and covert side of space and get to the bottom of how the governance system on planet Earth really works, and to make sure that the space economy contributes to a human future here on Earth. I'm speaking to you tonight from Sydney, Australia, and on May 7th, I'm on my way. Jason Bond-Smith, Richard Dolan, and I are on our way to Uluru for essentially 10 days. We're going to be joined by two wonderful groups of Solari Report subscribers, and we'll be in the Australian outback talking about the creation stories of the Aborigine and looking at the different rock formations and looking at the cave paintings of all the different reports of aliens visiting and other civilizations visiting Earth. There's no other way to describe it. Richard is going to be giving a presentation on ancient aliens and then another presentation on the cost of secrecy. Some of his most powerful presentations relate to the fact that basically secrecy and the cost of secrecy is changing and impacting everything. And so we're all very intimately connected with the UFO phenomena because it's driving so many aspects of our lives in a way that many of us, we want to see it head in a different direction. So I feel like this is great preparation for another round of discussions with Richard about how we integrate both the covert and overt aspects of what's going on in space so that we can come out with a much tighter and more practical understanding that really gives us the power to impact and change things and navigate the world for our free, inspired life, no matter how cuckoo things get. So I look forward after that time in Uluru. I'll be down in, I'll leave here on the Australia on May 18th and go to New Zealand for 10 days. And that'll give me a great time to digest and record and report to you about what we all figured out in the invention room in the Australian outback at Uluru. So again, this is the last segment of our first quarter 2018 wrap-up. I hope you take advantage of all the audios. We have transcripts of our discussions with Joseph. We'll have those up by the end of this week and early next week. And then the web presentation will, most of it is done. We have the Space Enterprise done. We have the write-up of the space-based economy now up but being proofed. And then we'll have our introduction and conclusion by Monday. So we should have it in PDF form in pretty quick order. So please digest and take advantage of this wrap-up. And you can send any updates or comments. You can post them both on the web presentation, in the commentaries, under subscriber input, or if you want to add companies to the space enterprises, if you started a space enterprise, just email it to us at space@solari.com. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me on the Solari Report. Remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. We know there's definitely a conspiracy in space. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.